Hey everybody, welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we're here again.
We return.
Corey, it is... I don't know. It's the not fun-ish thing about this time of year is that there aren't a lot of holidays or like big moments to kind of like hang your hat on and kind of like anchor yourself and be like, oh yeah, we're this close to this thing. Like it's always kind of the thing that I love about the fall is that, you know, you're pretty much, I mean, like September on, it's like, well, now it's fall. Now we're this close to Halloween. Now we're this close to Thanksgiving. I mean, for international listeners, maybe not. Maybe that isn't your case, especially if you don't celebrate Thanksgiving. And I know that there are other, like, in depending on what your religious affiliation is, like there are different religious holidays around this time of year, but like by and large, whenever it comes to like national holidays, it's this thing where it's like January until, for us in America, again, like July 4th, middle of the summer, there's really not much. It's all like minor holidays where it's like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day and you know, stuff like that. So I say all that to say, Corey, it is currently a random day in the middle of spring. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Me and my wife just got done watching Tenet. We were talking about a little bit before we started recording. It's like my third time watching it and it gets better every time because I do think it's a, I mean, I don't know if it's tough to follow the first time. It's just, it is confusing because it is a little like time warpy, you know, kind of the thing. But every time I've watched it, like second time, I'm like, okay, I know what to expect, like, and when now, time to pick up all the clues, X, Y, Z. Then the third time I'm like, okay, now let's look for like the little minuscule like details that like show up. And I was catching like a lot of things and it's expertly made, which is not shocking because it's Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
Also, he hinted at his next movie, Oppenheimer, in this movie because they talk about Oppenheimer for a little bit. I'm like, whoop.
Look at that. If you could guess, Corey, what is the Rotten Tomato for Tenet?
84.
No. Oh? Just wrong. No, it's 69.
Really?
Yep.
Well, Rotten Tomatoes can shuffle in, so.
Because they
gave the Super Mario movie like a 35, and I'm like, that was great.
Did they? Is it really a 35?
I don't know if it's that low, but I know it's rotten.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I haven't seen Tenet. It's 59, Mario movie.
Okay.
Audience score of 96.
Yeah. Well, was Tenet's audience score?
76.
See? Better. I think it's very good.
It's, Zack Snyder's The Justice League is 71%, which is high.
Yeah, most people like the Snyder cut more.
Well, yeah, but just in general, it's considered better than Tenet by Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes, again, can shove one.
Yeah, I'm just looking through this. Inception, 87. Dark Knight, 94.
Inception, 87. What?
You don't like Inception?
No, it should be higher than 87.
Oh.
Inception's incredible.
I like Inception. Yeah. Prestige, 76.
Should be higher.
I remember Tenet.
I'm a big Chris Nolan fan.
So. Yeah, I like his movies a lot. I haven't seen a ton. I've seen all the Batman movies. I've seen Inception.
Have you seen Dunkirk?
I have not. Dunkirk's
really good.
Oh, he was the director on Interstellar, really?
Huh. Yeah.
Okay. I've seen Interstellar.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't know he was...
Chris Nolan. Goated.
Anyway, everybody. I don't know. It's I would like to see Tenet. It's supposed to be good. Well, maybe one day. But Corey, you enjoyed Tenet. Anything else going on?
No, not too much. Seeing Taylor Swift tomorrow night, so that's gonna be very fun.
What?
Bury
the lead.
Just
good Lord.
Yeah. Driving to the ATL. Gonna go to the Eras tour.
Okay. Look at you.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I'm going tomorrow. I get to go to the reception of a family friend of my wife's family for their kid that I don't know. So thrilling. That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah.
So when you're listening to Taylor Swift, just think of me because I'm having as much fun.
You said maybe Sunday night. I'm like, no, Sunday's completely out for me.
I mean, you could do a live thing. We could set you up.
Yeah.
While you're there, just go.
I'm just talking about Crusader Kings 3 while you just hear blank space in the background.
I'm glad that you led with it, Corey. But let's talk about. So there's not a ton of news or anything. So we're just going to jump right in. Corey, what is your relationship currently with Crusader Kings 3? And do you need help?
Yes. It's bad. I finished my Italy run with the Italia Empire that spaced from the top of Spain to through Normandy and out into like the Polish region.
Okay.
And down a little bit into Africa and all of it. Italy, obviously.
Good God.
I talked about last week with the Crusader Kings 3, it does end in 1453. And so it gives you, you have a game over. No matter what, every time. It's, you get there and it's like, okay, this is what you've done. Are you happy with your run? Are you happy with the story you told, XYZ? And, you know, I kind of got to the end of it and I'm like, you know, I think by the end, I went pretty, power hungry, very tyrannical. I started out trying to grow Italy, founded a university, XYZ, and it went into a kind of became just bad at the end. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I didn't really like that. It wasn't great. So I started another run. I decided to do the, it gives you the preset ones, and there's the Spanish ones where it's three different brothers, and it's based on real historical brothers, where I can't remember I'm not going to get the exact historical terminology correct, but essentially the king of Spain, he loved his middle child the most. And instead of typical rulerships back in the day where the oldest just inherited the kingdom and you moved on, he divided his kingdom into three between his three children. His three sons got it. And so you can pick any of the three sons, the three brothers to play. They each all have a specific play style. One's very warlike. The other one's more intrigue, backstabbing, political drama. And I think the other guy is more mercantile. Okay. I went with King Sancho, and who is the more warlike, immediately conquered the other two. Took one over and forced the other one to just yield.
Yeah.
Created the King of Spain. And so far I'm a couple hundred years in, I'm halfway through and I'm learning more and more with the game. There's a whole cultural, wheel that I haven't even touched in my first two runs that I've seen it and I never knew really how to get to it, but you can pull up a culture tab and it's here are all the inventions or ideas during this window of the time you're playing, whether that be trebuchets, men at arms, heavy cavalry, different things like that. Or there's cultural ideas of how succession takes place or banking, you name it. And you can choose instead of how, if you don't do anything, it pans out historically how the region you're playing in develops, to my understanding. That you can choose a different cultural fascination for your ruler to focus on, and you could get trebuchets 70 to 100 years earlier than your rivals could, if that makes sense, which changes the war path for you tremendously. Or you could find a cultural fascination in banking, which is going to generate more revenue for you. More gold to where you can invest more, things like that just never knew existed in my first two plays. Yeah. Now I'm in this one, like, okay.
Had
like,
no clue.
Yeah. Now I'm like picking, like, okay, like, how do I, like, what do I focus on? Like, what do I get first? And how's that going to put me ahead? Where is that? Am I going to gain enough ground here? And so far in this one, I've gone with a much more like benevolent, like rulership of a family kind of a thing. Like not really going to war with my like vassals who are wanting like lower crown authority. I'm like, you know what? I'll give it to you kind of a thing. I'm tired of like tons and tons of like with my Italia empire. It was, I always wanted the full control. Like it went very tyrant. And so they're trying to rebel and yep. I'm just squashing it. And this time I'm like, you know, let's take a step back. Sure, we'll do this. We're going to grow. I'm going to keep power. That way, when my next in line takes over, there's no faction to put X on the throne. There's no faction for their own like independence. It's okay. We're going to step in. I'm going to raise my crown authority back up. Get a little bit more money. Make some friends. X, Y, Z, and like be loved by the vassals, like mm-hmm. by the people, kind of a thing. And I think I've done that pretty well. It's made it much harder to, because I think last week in Crusader Kings, there's the whole eugenics side of it where like there's different like heretical traits that pass yep. down, whether that's beauty, whether that's like, there's different like names for it, but essentially like how strong or like hardy, like they're, fortitude of a child is, or like intellect, X, Y, Z. Doing this has made it much harder to do that because it's tough to keep the highest crown authority, which within Crusader Kings, when you have the highest crown authority, you can choose your heir. So it's easier to pick, okay, who's the best of the bunch kind of a thing. Like, yep. who do I want to play as next? I obviously want to play as the best. And so I'll pick them. But floating around 2 and 3 most of the time in my crown authority makes it very difficult to do that. And I'm sure like down the line, I'll figure out how to ride this balance even better. But all this is to say it's a problem.
Yeah.
Because yeah. it's so good. I enjoy it so much. The more I've looked into it, I'm so upset that the console versions don't get the updates like as quickly as the PC versions, because the PC has like so many like DLCs already tossed onto it.
Oh, really?
And, mm-hmm. And the consoles only have like 2, and I think 6 have released now. Okay. Might be 5 with another one coming in like a couple weeks. For PC, it's just like when, and I was looking in more Reddit, more people were like, yeah, the consoles don't get enough attention, compared to the PC. And I'm like, do I get on PC now? Like, do I put on
is this when? Well, and I guess it's partially because with a lot of that stuff, it's like the PC version is like that is what the developers are making. Yes. Meanwhile, yeah. like the console version is a ports of that version, so you have to rely on the porting developer mm-hmm. to also adapt that, and that's its own thing. Yeah, it sounds like your Spanish run is going better than mine, though, because I can't remember if I talked about that last week.
Yeah,
I know I mm-hmm. talked about it to you, but I don't yes. remember if I talked about it on the podcast. But yeah, I went with Alfonso in that, and he died within mm-hmm. like 2 years from getting murdered, and
Well, I'm pretty sure. So I looked into it, and I know the king I chose technically dies 2 years into it as well. He's murdered. Mm. And it's like believed that one of the brothers did it. Because all 3 die rather quickly.
Okay.
Within that, to my understanding. And I think it was Alfonso. It's whoever like the more intrigue one is.
Okay.
And after I claimed I think it's Leon. Do you remember, did you do Leon or Galicia?
It was Leon.
Okay. I think it's Leon. Regardless, I disinherited him and like banished okay. him. Gotcha. Essentially after I took Leon over. I was like, no, go. Like you're done. Which avoids the murder scheme that he puts in place.
Okay. So, look at you. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah, you hit the curve.
Yeah. I need to play it some more. Again, mm-hmm. it's just one of those things. Like, I mean, you've put in what? 1,000 hours? 2,000 hours?
Over 100 okay. for sure.
Yeah, it's that. It's like, it's very, it sounds like it's an incredibly rewarding thing to it's get to a place where you're like, yeah. You're like really understanding these systems. But yeah, it takes some doing. And I feel like my, like as much into strategy games and stuff that I am, like I feel, and I think, I guess it's partially because I didn't grow up playing like PC where you mm-hmm. had so many strategy games. So you always kind of get like, not that they're like easier, but you get the console, like baby's first strategy game in a way where it's like, they're hard, but in a different way. They're not necessarily like as deep and robust. They're more challenging in like the gameplay or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is. But I mean, it's kind of the same thing with City Skylines where it's like, you know, I play it, but then once you get into public transportation, it's like, God, like, how am I going to work in like a train depot in here? And I'm going to like, how's this going to work into my existing infrastructure? Like, there's no way. How does anybody plan for this? How does anybody, like, you know, I've been playing a little bit on PS5 and it's like, you know, I got a above, like a elevated, like train system running through town, and that felt like a win. And nice. Then it was like, oh, now let's help you figure out subways. And I was like, let's not. But I was please. Like, I can't do it. Yeah, I don't know. It is such an impenetrable thing, but I do want to get there. I want to feel the joy that you feel in your life right now, Corey.
I think a lot of it stems. And so growing up, I played a game. I think it was Star Wars. I think it was like Galactic Battlegrounds or something on PC, something along those lines. Okay. I can't remember exactly what it is, where you start as one of like 8 different factions, whether it's Wookiees, mm-hmm. Clones, Empire, Trade Federation, Gungan, Rebel Alliance, the Confederation.
The Confederacy.
The Confederacy and one or two more. Regardless, but in that game, it was essentially like kind of like Crusader Kings, just very, very dumbed down where you are. You're choosing what to develop. You're choosing like, okay, what am I going to build here? Okay, I have to gather resources like carbon or... I have to like chop down trees XYZ to like cultivate, that way I can like build barracks and have troops. And I never played online, but it was always just okay, I do very large map, very hard, and there's 8 different people you're all warring against, and you're having to like take them all down, so it's all 8 against everyone. And you're just doing the best you can. And I remember I put in probably hundreds and hundreds of hours into that, probably thousands of hours into that game. And I think that idea like established this like strategy resource management fascination for me, whether it's been like Football Manager or Crusader Kings. There is like something about it that like just has my brain going at all times with it.
It's definitely one of those things where you have to, I feel like you have to like having it, it's a muscle you have to develop. Cause I mean, I've played RTSs, you know, I played some Halo Wars. I played a little bit of, you know, something else at some point. Yeah. But it is definitely one of those things where, like, you know, it takes a different part of your brain. You have to kind of work through, like, all of that management of stuff, even outside. Because, I mean, even, like, a strategy game like Fire Emblem, you know, I mean, it's tough in its own way, but you're not managing all of these other things. You're really just strategizing based on like a few key factors, positioning yep. and attack power and like this weapon against this weapon and whatever. You're not also managing like, oh, well, this guy like rode over this rock and accidentally broke his leg and now he's like bleeding out and I need to like, and he's also hungry. So I need to figure out how to like feed him while he's out on the field and you know, whatever. It's very simple in that way. So yeah, I need to break through because it's gonna hold me back from a world of wonderful games, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it's gotten to the point now where like I'm manually controlling my army and sometimes I'll let it just like automate, but I'm doing like actual strategy of like, okay, I have like 4,000 soldiers over here. I see, and like another like 6,000 over here that's mine. I see they have like 7. Let me bait them with like 2,000. I'm going to like split this army over and move them a couple towns near them and like
yeah.
bait the fight kind of a thing. And I'll like be moving them while I'm moving my other big army to essentially like pincer the whole yeah. time. Like they're swinging behind. And eventually it's like, okay, I'll let them catch up to essentially engage the fight. And so it sounds bad, but I'm like, okay, I'm sacrificing like 2,000. They're gonna take plenty with them. But yeah, I'm pulling a pincer move while my other army comes in from behind. And then, yeah, so it's very rewarding. You learn more and more every time.
I wonder if... I wonder if that's holding me back. I think I've been doing all of the army stuff manually the entire time.
It's very difficult.
I
automated
it. That's messing me up.
I automated it for the most part for my first two runs. Mm-hmm. It was really only towards the end of my Italian one where I was having so many rebellions and I'm like, okay, who's leading this rebellion? Where are they?
Yeah,
and I would just send my army and doom stack them. I'm like, okay, I see you're with, because at that point I had like 60,000 to call upon. I'm like, okay, I see you're with like 15,000 over here. I'm going to literally rain fire on you, and whoever's leading it dies, and then the fight's over because it's like, well, there's no more cause or claim from that faction because whoever they were trying to install is dead. And they're like, well, they're dead, so I guess the war's over. I'm like, yeah, it is.
Have you played Civilization games at all?
I tried Civ 6 like a year ago. Did not love it. I don't know if it was the art style or what. I might just got it played it at the wrong time. But because the whole time I've been playing this, I'm like, man, I would love something like ancient Rome to do this in, like even older. And they do have games that do that. Paradox Studios does. But I was reading through like Reddit and someone was like, yeah, Civilization kind of lets you do a little bit of whatever you want. And so
yeah,
I'll try it out.
I have... I played Civilization Revolution on the 360, which was like a console version of Civ 4, I think is how it was. I own Civilization 6 on Switch, and I think the only thing that kept me from like really digging in and playing it is that like the load times are really rough. And so it was like, it was taking a while to do, like it looked great, it ran great, but it was just, it seemed a little too beefy for the Switch.
Yeah, I got it for like $12 when it was on sale on PS5. Okay. So.
Yeah, I may try that again on PS5, because Crusader Kings 3 is good on, I mean, I know it's not the ideal way to play, but it's good on consoles. City Skylines, I've played on both PC and console now, and it's good on console. So, yeah, I don't know. Interesting, Corey.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see. Yeah, maybe I'll get back to it. In the meantime, I've been on apparently just a horror Resident Evil kick recently. Resi
kick.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, I talked about it last week, but I started Resident Evil 7. I was unsure if I would play any more in the time since. I have finished Resident Evil
7. Yes, he has. Look at him. Round of applause. Snap, snap, snap.
Yeah, it was... Here's what I will say. So, like, Resident Evil 7, far and away, is, like, the tensest Resident Evil experience of them all. I don't think it's like the scariest game I've played, because I mean, if you remember, listeners, you won't, but Corey, you might. I did a YouTube channel at one point where I played, and for the like
Soma?
Yeah, I played Soma. I think would take it as like the scariest game.
I could not finish that Soma, let's play from you.
Yeah, Soma was rough. It was
horrible.
And Soma, like, if anybody's trying to connect the dots, it's from the same people that made like Amnesia, like Dark Descent, I think, which Amnesia for the longest time has been like, this is the like scariest game you'll play.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a rough game. It's not as bad as that, but it's tough. It's tense. It's scary. I will say that once you get to there's an area called like the training area, test area, something like that. Once you get there, it's not that scary anymore.
Okay.
Like, it's still tense. There's still some moments like, you know, there's an area later on where you're on a boat, and that's a little like, that's kind of tense throughout. And there's still like, overall, just the vibe of it is still pretty dense. But like, I would say from the beginning of the game until you get to that point, there's a good bit of like, just scary content. And it really, I had to get to a point where like at any moment, like I was basically almost disassociating with myself, and was like, at any moment, I'm basically expecting at every second to be scared, so that when something scary happens, it doesn't scare me. And that's basically how it had to function, because like the honestly, the main one that got me was Marguerite Baker. So the Baker family of the game are, you know, it's Jack Baker's the dad, Marguerite Baker's the mom, Lucas Baker is like the son, and then there's old Granny off to the side. And like, you know, old Granny pops up around the house just at random spots and stuff, and she doesn't do anything. And Lucas is like, you know, he's more like a sadist. Like, he's not really scary. He just like is dark and, you know, twisted. Jack is like, he's scary because he like stalks you around, and I mentioned before, like whenever he's near you, like he's kind of calling to you and like giggling and stuff, and that's kind of unsettling.
Yeah.
But Marguerite is legitimately unhinged. So she's this like, she's played as this like the mom. So you grew up in a very small town, and you went away to college and left them. And this is like your mom who hates you forever because like they weren't good enough for you. Like, that's kind of the portrayal of it. Mm-hmm. So she's very unhinged. She's very like takes everything personally and like just screams and curses about everything. And she's very shrill. And it also doesn't help that like her whole vibe has to do with bugs. So her whole like thing is, which I mean, the bugs themselves are fine, but like, it's just, she has this very, you know, it isn't just like a creepy kind of sense. Like, she carries this kind of like gross insectoid kind of like vibe to her as well. Plus she's shrill, plus she'll pop up around a corner and just like scream at you all of a sudden. Like she's very, very disappointed in you. And it's very like, it's very off-putting. And there's this one, I think one of the scenes that like set me off the most, the mild, not really spoilers, but just like mild scene setting spoilers, I guess, for Resident Evil 7. There's this scene where you have to like, you pseudo kind of fight her and she falls into a pit and she has this lantern that she carries around with her all the time.
Okay.
And she drops it and is laying in the pit. And you climb up, you go through this room that she had kind of like blocked you out of, and you get to the back of the area, and she has this contraption that basically requires her lantern to open the door. Like it has to act as like a counterbalance. So you're like, okay, I gotta go get that lantern. So you go back to the hole and you look down, and she like she had dug a hole out of the side. She's gone. But she then scurries in like a spider and grabs the lantern and then just scurries out. And you hop down in the hole and you watch her go down the hole like a spider, just like on all fours, just crawling out the thing. Once I got past that part, like once I got out of that area of stuff, the game didn't feel all that tense anymore. And I was legitimately interested in like the overarching, what was happening here, because like, you know, it doesn't have all that many connections to the grand Resident Evil franchise. Like there are, you see notes laying around, like there's, which I know there are names and stuff that I don't fully recognize since I'm not like super deep into the series, but like, you know, there are notes about like, oh, the incident in Raccoon City basically happened like 20 years ago. Jeez. So basically okay, obviously we're in the same place. Resident Evil 2, 20 years ago. Got it. You know, so there's stuff like that. There are notes like that. And it also has the, whole kind of like, you know, things seem very like otherworldly and spooky from the start, but really it's like has to do with weird science stuff later, you know, which is kind of Resident Evil's thing where it's like, whether it's zombies, whether it's whatever, it all come like you always end up in a lab where there's some sort of like, that's basically kind of the arc of it.
Yeah.
And it has that, like, there are those connections to it. But yeah, I mean, by and large, like, it was just, like, I think it was really good and very effective in what it was kind of telling. But, like, it's not, when looking at it, like, there's a part of me that's like, oh, I would go back and play Resident Evil 4 remake. Like, I would go through and do something like that. I'm not going to go back and play Resident Evil 7.
Don't blame you.
I don't want that in my life. Fortunately, I mean, I've at this point I've played it. If Resident Evil Village is, I mean, I can't imagine, everything I've heard, Resident Evil Village is not like Resident Evil 7. No. So I'm not too worried about it, but it's like, even if it is like, I feel like I've seen the worst of it at this point. Yep. And that's like, that's comforting because I can move forward. And it also makes me like, I mean, I feel a little proud of myself because like I was worried about games like Alan Wake 2. Alan Wake 2 comes out, they're taking more of like a horror approach with it. And I was a little bit worried about that because I was like, man, like I love Alan Wake, but Alan Wake can be a little creepy. Like, I can't imagine it being like really bad, but now I feel like, I mean, I'm not going to go play Outlast or Condemned or something, but I feel like I've earned a little bit here having gone through it and come out the other side.
Nice. Well,
it's nice.
Yeah. Proud of you. Glad one of us did it. Glad it was you. Listeners can expect a Resident Evil spoiler chat here probably in the next like maybe back half of this week.
After Corey's going to be playing through Resident Evil 7. We're going to talk about it.
No, might play through like 3 or 8.
Look at you.
But, I mean, we're going to talk like spoilers through 4, 7, and 2. So,
yeah,
it'll be good.
Are you going to play 2?
I want to play either 8 or 2. Okay. It's like on the list, maybe 3. Just not 7. I would say 8 and 2 are top of the list. But I have no intention of ever playing 7. I might just read like a wiki synopsis and just be like, okay, that works.
Yeah. The benefits. So I haven't, because I am legitimately interested in the arc of Village, I've seen a few things kind of talking about like Village's whole stuff. I'm sure that it gives you a little bit of a synopsis at the beginning, but it does seem like it plays a lot into what happens in 7 and what's set up in 7. So, just saying, Corey, if you go into 8 without playing 7, it may not be as good of an experience as you're hoping for.
I think it'd be great.
You may want to reconsider.
I think it'll be very good.
Yeah. So, but in other fun news, Corey, I've also been playing, the short thing first. I played the, Street Fighter 6 demo, Corey. It was like 30 minutes. Nice. there wasn't a whole lot to it. I downloaded it because I wanted to kind of see what was up. There's a little bit of the world tour campaign mode. It lets you create your character. You do a little bit of like running around. And then there's also like you can play kind of like a versus match against a computer where they're only, I think it's like Ryu and whatever the other guy's name is, Luke, maybe. Not a whole lot to do there, but it does give you kind of a glimpse into the overall thing. It's strange. Like the game, I mean, the fighting plays, I don't have really any frame of reference having not played 5. It's been a while since, because I played Street Fighter 4, so it's been a distance between the two. The game feels good to play. The World Tour mode is such a, I'm fascinated by it, honestly. Like,
yeah.
So it gives off the energy of what if, like, my immediate connection was like Splatoon meets Yakuza was kind of my like immediate read, because it was very like, it seemed like I was playing a Yakuza game. Like it seemed very goofy and it seemed kind of like that world and aesthetic, but it was also like very bright colors, very like, you know, kind of city, like not hip hop, but kind of like a softer, like a lo-fi city, some sort of like hip hop adjacent instrumental tracks, you know?
Okay.
And it also had like a big, I mean, it didn't let you do much in the demo, but there's shops, there are things you can go. So, I mean, there's a lot of, like, I imagine there's a lot of customization, and the customized character is very robust. And it's supposed to also play into how your character plays, because like taller characters, I mean, it even says this, but it's like taller characters can reach farther, but are bigger targets.
Yeah.
So like there's stuff rather than just being aesthetic. It's like, okay, if you're taller, you can reach farther, but you have like a bigger hitbox, you know, whatever it is. But there's a lot of customization there. Really neat. I think the most like, The funniest part of it, I think, is the fact that like you kind of, it opens you up into this like little city hub area. And the first thing is like, okay, I want you to fight somebody. And it's like, okay, who? Okay. And it's like, just anybody. And it's like, okay. And literally, you can run up just to anybody on the street and be like, let's fight. And then you just, I mean, it's just like, here's a kid with a backpack. And then you start fighting. And then you like kick his ass. And then he's laying on the ground. And people are like, yeah.
It's like, take that, little boy.
And then you run over to somebody, like you run over to this lady who's just like in a business suit on the cell phone. And you're like, you want to fight? She's like, yeah. And then it's like, you fight really quick. And then she's on the ground. And you're like, yeah. Like, it's just, there's this whole, it's very like, it's Street Fighter logic. It's that whole thing of like, everybody wants to fight. Fighting makes everything better. We answer things with fists, not words. Like, this is just, this is the only language that everybody understands.
The sword is mightier than the pen in this world.
Right. The pen doesn't exist. It's just all swords. It's like, it was such an interesting thing. And I'm very, like, I am interested. Like, it was pretty much just all tutorial. So like it wasn't like a ton of fun because it was very like, it's not like it dropped you in the middle and was letting you experience something. It was walking you through a lot of things. It was not giving you the floodgates. And like, once it does open, that's whenever the demo ends. It's basically like, you know, your character will be meeting these other legends. And it's basically like at the end of the demo, it's like, hey, you should go meet Chun-Li in Chinatown. It's like, what? And it was like, demo over. So, I mean, it's hard to tell what that whole experience is going to look like, but it seems interesting. It seems neat. I'm glad that they're kind of taking some sort of approach, because I mean, that's always been my thing with fighting games that's tough, is just the, like, if it doesn't have like a robust single player experience, it's tough for me personally to necessarily like justify getting it. If it's just like, okay, like if I'm going to be playing through the arcade mode or whatever, like I'm not going to be playing with a ton of people. So it's not like I'm going to be getting the full mileage out of this of like couch versus or whatever. But when it has like something else going on, it's like, okay, I can have this other thing to dig into. I can play this other thing and enjoy it. But yeah, I don't know. It's I'm interested in it. Comes out in June. Nice. We'll see what's up. Yeah.
That's definitely going to be the title of the episode, though. Pens don't exist here. Only swords.
Yeah. Yeah. Only swords.
It's a good time.
Read into that how you will.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I don't know. I'm just not the most into fighting games. I mean, there was like a brief period at my previous job where me and Logan, who's been on the show, played Smash every day for like an hour on our lunch break because we worked together. And I got really good at that. But I don't know if I've ever been super into fighting games. But I don't know. That does sound intriguing.
I grew up playing Street Fighter with my brother a lot. Because I played Street Fighter 2 on SNES a lot. We would go to our mall, believe it or not, at one point an arcade. So we would go to the mall. And yeah, they would
back left at the food court.
Yeah. Now it's been a lot of things. It was a pup place at one point. It was a spa at another point. May not even be anything anymore. I don't know. But yeah, they had Street Fighter 3rd Alpha 3, Alpha Strike, 3rd Alpha Strike, whatever that one was. Marvel versus Capcom 2. You know, they had like a bunch of your classic fighting games. So we'd play those a bunch. We would go, we would play them. I would play games at home. And then, you know, also, I mean, the first Smash came out whenever I was, six, seven, like that. So I've always played them a lot, but it's always been like, I think with most people, like your best memories of playing fighting games are playing them with other people. And I mean, that's the thing is like Smash Ultimate. I mean, I would put Smash Ultimate on Switch, like one of my top games of all time. Like, I think it's just phenomenal experience. But, you know, I mean, I will pretty much only break it out whenever there's somebody who is going to play it with me, which is not very often. You know, my wife's not stepping up to go toe-to-toe at Smash with me. I wish she would. She can hear me right now, I think. I wish she'd get good at it, and then we could go to town on that experience, but, you know, she won't.
Maybe one day.
It's...
you should do it, Abby.
But, yeah, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to kind of see how Street Fighter VI shakes out, what the general consensus is, and because I know Street Fighter V was not like super well received when it first came out, so I'm interested to see like what the general feel is on this. So yeah, we'll see.
Nice. Corey,
what else you been playing?
I picked the Burning Shores DLC for Horizon Forbidden West and been checking that out. I will say it is the most graphically impressive thing I've seen on PS5.
Okay.
Buy it.
Love it. Better than Rift Apart?
Yes, I would, because I think Rift Apart was the immediate standard. And I would say this DLC has like brought a new standard to it. It is gorgeous. It's just to look at, to play.
Which I think Burning Shores is
only,
I think
PS5.
It's only on PS5.
It's only
whereas
on PS5.
The original was PS4, PS5. So
yeah, I mean it is, it's insane how good it looks. From now actual Horizon, like into gameplay, it's, you know, it's Horizon. You get more Horizon. I do think story wise within this DLC, it throws you in the deep end pretty quick. There's very little window dressing. It's very much you're in the weeds right away. Which, you know, I appreciate that it's not gonna sit here and like tease you, but at the same time, I'm like, I was hoping for just like maybe someone to be like, why are we letting this outsider in here?
Yep.
And into our settlement. Who is she? Where is she from? Oh, we're letting her just roll. Yeah. Okay. It's very few questions are asked. Not the worst thing in the world by any means. Don't get me wrong, but it was just kind of like a little jarring from a story perspective.
Okay.
From a gameplay perspective, I can tell this DLC being PS5 only, like they have like tuned up the enemies a good bit, if that makes sense. There's new machines that you can take down and fight. There's like this frog one. Incredibly difficult to fight. Oh my gosh. But the machines now are smarter, I would say. Like they are coordinating like their attacks on me. Like if I'm facing one and it's like there's three of them, I'm facing one or two, I know the third one is like flanking me. Is like they're not all swarming. It is like smart, coordinated like tactics that they are using on you, which is, I think, in the first Horizon, you could really just like, you know, run through the brick wall if you had to. Like, I can just like brute force my way through a fight if I want to. I don't have to get creative. Yeah. I don't have to like do a ton of things. I can just like load up some arrows, knock off like a big machine part to use, and do my thing. I think Forbidden West, like base, changed that up a little bit, required you to be, I guess, just a little bit smarter. Like, no, you need to use your arsenal to like really take on like these scenarios. And I would say now it's very much like you need to like get a little bit of a vantage point, figure out where everything is, lay down some traps, put some trip wires down, like might try to pick one off like stealthily if you can, and like no, you are now hunting them, otherwise you will be overwhelmed rather quickly, because that happened to me like a couple of times early on. And And it has been a more rewarding and engaging experience, I would say, combat-wise. Because it's always been very fun. It's always been like, I mean, you're hunting giant robotic metal dinosaurs. Very fun.
Yeah.
I think now it's just been like, okay, now I have to like really think through this. Otherwise, it's just going to go really badly. And I enjoy that. I appreciate that. I know that's not for everyone. There's difficulties. You can turn it on and I imagine change it between like whatever level you're playing on. But personally, I have really enjoyed like, okay, set tripwire here, tripwire here, some bombs over there because there's one over here and I know he's going to come this way. Now let me like lead them through like this like essentially booby trapped like place I have set up. Like I know I'm going to like run, like they're going to trip, they're going to fall. I'm going to load up a power shot, drop that one, try to move up to this vantage point, like take down like maybe this flying one that's going to be up there. You name it. It's very good. Very fun. I'm enjoying it.
Love it. That's great. It's very nice. You said you like it better than Frozen Wilds.
Yeah. We talked about it off. I think I do like it better than Frozen Wilds. I would say story wise, Frozen Wilds eases you into it. I would say a bit more. It's like, okay, here's kind of what's going on. Kind of this is very much a like, all right, here's the issue. I would say it does tie directly into the main story. It's one of those things where I would be thoroughly shocked if like this isn't like integral for Horizon 3, kind of what's happening here.
Okay.
While I feel it's
after the main story.
Yeah, you can only play it after the main story. You can't just like it doesn't show up halfway through or something like that. It is specifically post campaign. And it feels like more of an epilogue than a like a little side quest, if that makes sense. It's like, oh no, here's where we're at and all of this with how 2 ends, like, because 2 ends with, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's just like, okay, here's what the plot of 3 is going to be. It's kind of how 2 begins, and this is very much like 2.2, I guess. It's like, this is out there, you need to like we got to like resolve this before this comes in, otherwise like it could spell more trouble for us. So, which I appreciate, Lance Reddick, who did recently pass, we talked about that a few weeks ago. It's wonderful to see his performance still in this. I think he has like one or two other projects that he has left, but you know, kind of a swan song as well, just to see that. It's really, really cool. He's in it for a bit. So all around, really, really enjoying it. If you wanted more Forbidden West, you're going to get more Forbidden West in this one.
Love it, Corey.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Have you been playing anything else?
Yes. I have one other thing. I don't know if you have anything else. But
I do, but keep going.
Okay.
Keep it up.
Well, okay. It'll be a very short segment or a little like bit from me. Checked out A Link to the Past before Tears of the Kingdom comes out this coming weekend. I haven't played a ton of it. I'm looking for the village elder. Well, I know where the village elder is in Link to the Past. I'm on my way to him, if that gives. So not super far in, maybe like an hour and a half.
Okay.
I went through the castle, got out, went to the village. Now I know where to go next.
Love it.
Okay. Now that I'm thinking about it, I could talk about it maybe a bit more. Knowing that it is the precursor to Link's Awakening, which is on GBA, it is very interesting playing this, having played a little bit of that GBA version as well. It's like very, very similar control scheme, like layout, all of that. Art style is just a wee bit different, but the music, like the world travel music, is the exact same. And it kind of like shocked me. I'm like, whoa, what is going on? And I can see a lot of the similarities between Link A Link to the Past and Link's Awakening. And it's very fun seeing just like this compare contrast, like what was pulled, what wasn't, like what are they using? And it's very fun so far. I see why it's like beloved, really. I've tried playing it before without having really played. The only other Zelda game I played before all of this was Breath of the Wild. And tried playing that because I've heard it was good. Didn't really like it. But I think Link's Awakening, specifically the Switch version, was such a good foundation for me for lore. Maybe these older titles of like, okay, I know what to expect. I know like what these dungeons are like. I know like what my controls are. I know what like the boomerang's going to do and XYZ, like the flame, magic flame, fire, all of that. Like I know essentially like the foundations now, it kind of feels, and playing this is almost kind of getting on a bike again. Like, okay, like my sword's going to go in front of me. Like I have a window to hit as well. I know my boomerang's going to stun, like you name it. And it's been really, really good getting back into like just another Zelda game. I will not finish it before Tears of the Kingdom comes out this weekend, but it's good enough and I'm enjoying it enough to be like, okay, this is something I like definitely want to come back to and like finish. I've looked, it has a pretty lengthy runtime, especially for a game of its times, like 15 to 17 hours is what I've seen, which is pretty lengthy. I feel like games in like 92 were not that long. Granted, I was alive in 92, but it just feels kind of lengthy for its time. But still, altogether, very positive thoughts. And I really enjoyed it.
Love it. Also, just as a clarification for you and the folks at home, Corey, Tears of the Kingdom does not come out this weekend.
Well, yes.
It comes out in a couple of weeks.
No, it comes out this next weekend.
No, it does not.
What day
is it? Comes out on the 12th.
Oh, I thought it came out on the 5th.
No.
Are you sure?
That's Cinco de Mayo.
Are you sure it doesn't come out on the 5th? I could have swore it came out on the 5th. Are you punking me?
No. I am seriousing you, Corey.
Maybe I do have time for Jedi Survivor.
Look at you.
Hold on.
Yeah, you got time.
I'm pulling it up. Well, I also have time. Yeah, 5/12/23. What? Why was I thinking it came out on the 5th?
I don't know. Something comes out on the 5th, though, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Well, okay, well, now this has changed everything because I'm like, oh, I have to finish everything before Friday, and I'm leaving Wednesday. Like, I have to finish everything before Tuesday. This has changed a lot of things.
How are you even, like, keeping yourself together knowing that you were going to be out of town whenever Tears of the Kingdom came out
mind? I just had resigned to either I'll pick it up on Sunday on my way home or I'll go pick it up Friday while I'm out of town. I am bringing my Switch. But
no, it doesn't look like there's anything on the 5th. That's weird.
Okay. Well, I haven't. Wow. This is nice. It's like a reward.
Here we go. Look at you.
Extra week.
Yeah. Good job, Corey.
Thank you.
You did it.
Maybe I do have time to finish A Link to the Past, if that's the case.
I think you got it. You'll get there. I promise.
We'll see.
Yeah. But yeah, then there's that. And then there's, what else? Diablo 4 on June 6th. Then we got Final Fantasy 16 on June 22nd. And yeah, here it comes. My other thing, I talked a little bit about it last week, but I've played more Advance Wars, playing some of that. The game's I think it's barely different from how it was on the GBA. Like, I think they've done a little bit to the campaign. But it's also been so long since I've played Advance Wars that it's not like my memory is the, like, most dependable thing on that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not entirely sure like how far I am. I'm on the first campaign. I'm making my way along. I'm enjoying it. Like it is a different strategy game. It's a, you know, I think because Advance Wars, I think at the time that I had played Advance Wars, really the only strategy games like it that I had played were Final Fantasy Tactics, maybe on the PlayStation 1. But now, you know, we do have so many different games and we do have so many different options where you can play, you know, big Fire Emblem, you know, whatever titles, or you can play smaller like Into the Breach or, you know, whatever else. And so it does feel like there is an element of it that does feel kind of like old. And in that regard, like kind of behind the times in a way, but like, there is a like charm and fun to Advance Wars that I do just that kind of takes me back. And it is like it is also a different strategy game because it does take, I mean, it's kind of the unfortunate nature of war, I guess, but like, you know, the strategy in a lot of cases is okay, build some stuff and then just like throw units at the enemy to kind of like create your, like get like, here's a distraction. I'm going to throw everybody at you. I need you to not attack this guy. So I'm going to send some infantry you to kill. That's kind of more the direction as opposed to something like Fire Emblem where every unit is precious and you're not like trying to let anybody die. So it's a very like kind of different experience, but it is still it's a good strategy game. Each one of the things feel like their own like puzzles and all of the commanding officers do feel very unique. And I think that like expands even more in the second one, because I think in the first one, you only play as the Orange Star Army and the Orange Star Army only has three COs. They have Andy, Max, and, who's the other one? Who's the girl? I can't remember. Is it like, it's like,
I have no idea.
I can't remember. She's really good with infantry. Like Andy's kind of like an all arounder. Max is really good with like tanks. And the lady is really good with, infantry. And then like some of the other COs, it's like, oh, this guy can see like his indirect units. Like, so his artillery units and stuff, they have longer range. Or this one, like, you know, their superpower lets their air units attack twice in a turn or whatever. So, like, you know, the COs, like, do come with their own sets of benefits. And so going into these battles, whenever you're going against some of these, like, rival leaders, it is very, like, your tactics change.
Right.
You have to kind of go at it a different way where it's like, okay, like, okay, now that I'm going against the guy that can snipe me from a distance, I need to think differently about how I'm kind of like setting this up. So there is a lot of that. There is strategy to being able to do that. And I think with two, I think there are more COs. I think you actually get to play as significantly more COs as well. So you have like more options on your end on what to do. So there's, I think that'll continue to expand, but no, it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. It's a blast.
Corey, it's on my list.
It's a blast from my past.
Yeah. Nice.
Also fun fact, which just goes to show, I guess, how like, the bad luck of Advance Wars development. I don't think we've talked about this, but it's Advance Wars. So Reboot Camp was supposed to release
last year
prior to the Ukrainian Russian war that's going on. And then it was pushed back. Do you know on what date the original Advance Wars dropped on GBA?
9/11.
September 10th
Oh.
2001.
That's what I call a yikes.
Yeah. The day before. And then I think it didn't come out in Japan for like years later. They just were like, yep, nope. You'll see this one maybe never. Yeah, so it's kind of, wow. You know, Horizon has bad luck of like dropping at the same time as other big,
yeah,
like pivotal games. Advance Wars, just if an Advance War is coming, be aware something that also a real war is also probably coming. So just know that.
Wow, that's tough. You hate to see it.
Yeah,
you really
do. Yeah, and nobody loves it. But but on that note, Corey, this has been an episode. I think
it's been an episode.
Do you have anything else?
No, not really. You know, we're going to record our Resi bonus probably here in the next couple of days, and then record next week post Taylor Swift.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Can't wait to hear about it. Corey. I don't know what I was going to say next.
You can find me.
Where can people find you Instagram. On the internet?
Hashling Thrasher or Twitter at Say Thrashy, but always follow us at @arcade_cozy. Chris, where can I find you?
Love it. You can find me at 4PointPixel on Instagram, at SwissFunJoe on Twitter, and other places as well. Some places. Intro, Mastodon. Outro music. Johnny Good. Yeah. Mastodon, maybe. Blue Sky, whenever I get my invite. Yeah. Maybe. Who knows? Also, arcadecozy@gmail.com. Send emails.
Yeah, please.
Just comments, concerns. Intro, outro music by Johnny B. Good, 89. Cool guy.
89.
Does cool music. Corey, next week we'll have something. I think I might be starting Resident Evil Village.
Yeah, you are.
For long. I think I'm getting a copy next week. I may try to pick that, or I may try to hammer that out before Tears of the Kingdom.
I might snag Jedi Survivor with knowing that I have like an extra week. So
I was considering, but I'm not sure.
I really enjoyed Fallen Order. I've seen positive stuff from Survivor, and if it's improving upon some of, I would say, Fallen Order's weaknesses, I'm all into it.
Yeah. I was fine with Fallen Order. It was fine.
I think it was pretty good. I give it like a light 7 out of 10.
Okay. Soft 7.
A soft 7. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought its like core ideas were very good. I think it just wanted to be. I saw someone tweet today like Jedi Survivor is just Tomb Raider in space. I'm like, it's kind of Fallen Order is kind of just like Tomb Raider or Uncharted in space. Yeah. You're not wrong. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing by any means. But it does feel like kind of one of those games with just that skin until you get to combat. And you're like, oh no, this is a Souls-like.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. No. I don't know. I'll pick it up eventually. But I don't know if I'm there yet. We'll see. Corey, who knows? Look forward to maybe some of that, maybe some of Village. Definitely a Resi spoiler episode at some point. And everybody wish Corey a happy Taylor Swift. I'm sure he'll enjoy it.
Oh, I absolutely. It'll be my third time seeing her. It's going to be great.
Yeah. But until then, Corey, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be
two?
Yeah.